Hi, my name is Mattia Murray, and welcome to The Longer Road. You are on The Longer Road if you have multiple intersectional identities that are often marginalized. You've had to work harder to get to the starting line, and you might feel behind. I'm here to provide hope, support, and practical tips, and to let you know that you're not alone. Welcome to my guest, Sophia Apostle. She is a coach and the host of the Fat Joy podcast, which a friend of mine made that connection. I started listening to it. I was obsessed. I was like, oh my God, I hope she will be willing to talk to me and be here because I absolutely love her message. And I'm also going to ask her to add anything she'd like to say about herself.
Hi, Mattia. Thank you. Of course I would be here to chat. So yeah, my current obsession, and it's, I don't know if you feel the same way about your podcast, but I'm like obsessed now with my podcast and podcasting in general. So loving it. It's like such a creative outlet. I get to talk to amazing people. So that's a huge focus in my life right now. But I'm also a leadership coach. I work with leaders from all different types of companies, and I work with companies who get hired by organizations to bring in leadership coaches. So I work with a variety of people all over North America, a few in Europe. So that's pretty amazing. I love that work. And I'm also a creative writing coach, which is amazing as well, because I get to spend my time chatting with writers, teaching writing workshops, and yeah, just really being present to other people's creative process. I'm in Canada, so I'm kind of outside of Toronto, Ontario. I have two stepkids. I have a wonderful husband. Kind of living that suburban life until the kids are out. So 6 years and counting, and then hopefully we'll go a little more rural. Some land, maybe even some water. You know, we have big dreams. Yeah, otherwise, I don't know, kind of pretty normal, I guess, otherwise. I don't know what else to say. It's so funny. I always ask my guests to tell us, so tell us about yourself. And now being asked to do it, I'm like, oh, it's a horrible thing. It's really hard. I'm like, oh, should I tell you about this career thing I did and like this thing? And it's like, no, that we'll just stop it there and the rest will be revealed as we talk.
Exactly. We'll wind it out slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And you already started to touch on this, but what are you passionate about right now? So that could just be, you know, more about the podcast or anything else that comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, so the podcast is all about shining the spotlight on people who are fat and doing really cool stuff in the world. So anything related to anti-diet culture, which of course is rooted in racism, just as anti-fatness is rooted in racism and capitalism and toxic wellness and beauty culture. I mean, so I'm so interested in these lies that we are told about who we should and should not be. Mm. And I call bullshit on all of it. And the way I've chosen to do that is through what I am so passionate about, which is storytelling, which of course connects to the work I do with my creative writing clients, but also just, I mean, I'm in a former life, I was a librarian. So like, I just have this like love of stories and books. And I always have. I was that kid, you know, at 12 years old, like I couldn't go to sleep until I finished the last page of the R.L. Stine book or the Christopher Pike. I was really into like horror, those kind of like children's horror thriller novels for a while. And I just had to read it. And so there's a power in storytelling that I really recognize. And as I started really deepening further into anti-oppression learning, both like racism, ableism, gender, sexuality, neurodivergency, I've done trainings on all this stuff for years now, like just to keep learning, because they're all connected. Like this oppression is all connected. And living as a fat person, I've always felt it. But now that I've kind of done deep dive learning, I can see the spider web that has been created for us. I didn't know that there were lots of different ways to be an advocate. There's something called the Social Change Map by, I think it's Deepa Iyer. We could probably include a link if we wanted, that lays out that, you know, to bring in social change, to be an activist, There's lots of different ways to do it. You don't have to just be like at, you know, marching in the streets. And so that actually, that was a really important, it was actually presented as a graphic. So when I saw the graphic, I was like, oh, I can do this in a way that actually really plays to my strengths. And so my strengths are, if you can't tell already, I am a talker. And I'm very comfortable like reaching out to people and talking to them and, you know, supporting, shining a light on their stories. And so that's what I decided to do. And so I kind of just taken this like lifetime of frustration with being treated differently as a fat person, the frustration of seeing through a lot of our oppressive systems that I've been very fortunate and lucky to learn from amazing teachers in the last couple of years quite intensively, and just bringing all of that to conversations that then just go out into the world. And my hope is start to shift people's perception of fatness, because fatness is so vilified. So many assumptions are made about fat people. I mean, when we're recording this, freaking Brendan Fraser got an Oscar for The Fucking Whale, which is so offensive and wrong. And if you want to read about it, Roxane Gay, Lindy West, like people have been writing about how horrific this movie is. He's wearing a fat suit. It is deeply flawed in every way, this film. It is so, it's like, oh, I just, there's not even enough words. I don't even have words because I'm so mad by it. So like, this is why I'm just like, you know what? That is not fat truth.
Right.
Right. So on my podcast, I think we're on episode 28, just aired. Here are 28 other fat truths, you know?
Love that.
Oh, I just...
Oh, and I loved your recent episode too with the medical doctor, like a fat medical doctor.
Yeah.
First of all, because I always want resources that I can send to people, because this is one of my areas of obsession. And I kind of forget sometimes that like there are people who have literally zero knowledge that is correct about fatness, because they've only heard lies and they don't know any of the scientific information. And what's shocking to me is when it's someone I know with a medical background.
Oh my God.
So I always want things. So I'm very excited for like that episode with the doctor to be able to send people to just be like, here's a good place to start. Amazing. You know, if you're just starting. I also love, well, I love fat truth. I mean, that's like so great. The other thing I was thinking about, and I actually don't know, I saw a little bit about the whale, but I don't know the full plot. But I'm just assuming from what I've seen that it has some parallels with some of the stories I see about queer and trans people, which a lot of the storytelling is around, oh, look how sad and miserable they
100%.
Are, look how sad their life is. And it's like, this is, first of all, not representative of our lived day-to-day experience. And when we are miserable, it's because you made us this way by being horrible all the time. Like, we're not miserable because of the identity. We're miserable because of the societal bullshit around it.
That's it. Beautifully said. Exactly. And the film is also deeply ableist. Like, problematic, like on every level. Yeah, for sure. Well, and you know, we don't have to go too far down this road if we don't want to, but you know, medical practitioners are some of the most weight stigmatizing, weight discriminating people. I mean, and it's hard because again, like we have been given this rhetoric non-consensually our whole lives about why fat is bad. And it's all rooted in making money for big companies. And research shows that, but of course it's not well known. So Dr. Vicky Borgia, and then the episode that came out most recently too is someone who's in her residency, in their residency, Anne McGlattery, but Anne is talking about the root of what I think exacerbates the problem with medical professionals is that med school is filled with anti-fatness. Like Anne talks about,
people are trained to be anti-fat even if they came in
neutral. Every PowerPoint presentation has images of fat, headless fat bodies. Every conversation is linked with disease, with fatness, even though there's not a single disease that fat people get that thin people don't. And yet somehow fatness is a disease. It's like, no, it's so wrong. So yeah, there's lots of great research and evidence out there if people are interested in learning about it.
Yeah. And then I also know that medical professionals, when they start encountering the research, they are the ones that are the most resistant to it because of the just extreme anti-fatness in medical school.
Yeah.
They're very primed to only take in this information.
They can't believe it. Even when they look, like, another person who really spends a lot of time with medical doctors is Reagan Chastain. And Reagan and I,
That's a great episode also.
Yeah. And we talked about the research behind fatness and what is shown versus what is not shown. And Reagan spends her time in front of doctors, basically trying to open their minds. And we actually talked about that. I'm like, Reagan, that is a hard, thankless job. She's like, yep. It's just... yeah, because there's so much resistance. And I get this. I actually, my parents are medical professionals, and it's one of the reasons I've mostly gone no contact with them, because unfortunately, there has not been them. This is, you know, I have endometriosis. It's one of the things that I'm kind of dealing with right now from a medical perspective, dealing with my gynecologist, dealing with my family doctor. Like, the stuff that people have said to me without asking any questions, like assuming things about what I eat or how I exercise, but they haven't asked a single question, or suggesting weight loss without asking, do I have an eating disorder that actually would be harmful for me to do what they're suggesting in terms of weight loss. Like, again, there's just such mistreatment, and it's deeply, deeply unethical.
Yeah.
You know, it's so problematic. So yeah, I am passionate about all this stuff.
Me too. I am obsessed with it. And I have over time lost a lot of friends because I just refuse to allow bullshit.
Me too. Yeah. But it's also like, it's hard. And I also think for the first time in my life, I'm taking a stand for my own safety. And that has shifted so much for me. I think it's why I have the capacity to do a podcast, why I have the desire, as opposed to, like, you know, when anyone is allowed to say whatever they want and there's no boundaries put up, that takes an emotional toll on people who are marginalized, right? Whatever the marginalization is. And so that saps energy, that saps ability, emotional capacity. So putting up boundaries has actually been, and I'm a chronic people pleaser, so this was a really big deal. I spent years working on, but I had a very close friend I had to cut ties with because she just couldn't understand that what she said was problematic, and insisted that she did understand. But even as she was talking to me about it, I'm like, if you really understood, you wouldn't be using the words that you're using. Like,
yeah.
And I tried, this is like a 10-year friendship, so it was a really big deal, and tried and had, you know, just over and over to have conversations around it. And ultimately at some point, and this is really hard, but I just had to be like, you know what? She's on her journey. It's not for me to tell other people how to live. It's for me to live my life. And I've shared information. And if she wants to do some work and come back and open the conversation again, great. But I'm not going to keep putting myself in harm's way.
Yeah. Can I ask, in that particular relationship, what shifted? Or, like, was there a moment where you were like, I need to prioritize my safety over teaching this person?
Yes. So what happened really is that I have started to become more vocal, and I've stop giving fucks about offending people. I'm like, I am in my 40s. I get to say what I want. And so it's funny. It all started like the year before, or maybe the summer before, at a brunch where her partner said something about not understanding why, and he is a privileged white male, why he, as a leader of his team at this company, should have to use people's proper pronouns. And I was like, no. So that started it, because I called him out on it. I called out his male privilege. I did it I'm pretty passionate. I am not like a cool cucumber. So I did it in a way that I wasn't angry, but it was like, no, hey, come on. Like, no, like this is why and blah, blah, blah. And I wanted to have a conversation. So we did. So that was kind of like the first step. And then just, I think, little things. And then maybe it was the summer. And then around Christmas time, you know, we were on a call with another friend, and the friend who I've distanced from said something about, and you know, the funny thing is, I don't even exactly remember what it was, but I was just like, hey, you know what? That's kind of not cool. Like the way you said that, that's not true. And yeah, not cool. And then I got tone policed, and then I got white women's tears, and I got just all these microaggressions. And I was like, no. No. And so we talked about it. We had phone calls, we had in-person visits. We tried to work through it, but there was a real resistance. So it was like, it wasn't that someone did something. It was that there wasn't the curiosity and openness to learn more. So that's really what shifted it. And I mean, it was about a year of like kind of coming back together, having deeper conversations, me trying to explain, you know, and to talk through it. But what I got was a lot of spiritual bypassing, which showed up like, why can't you just give me grace? And I'm like, well, I love you and I want to give you grace, but I'm also privileging my safety. And as a marginalized person, I get to do that.
Yeah.
But no, just give me grace. I'm like, no, you don't get grace. And I think for me, that was also a really big realization to be like, no, this isn't about grace or tolerance. This is like, hey, it's like you're punching me in the face and I'm saying, hey, that hurts. And you're like, just give me grace. Why can't I punch you in the face? It's like, you know, because you're hurting me. And if that doesn't matter enough to you, then I'm not going to keep showing up to get punched in the face.
Yeah, this is a conversation. This makes me think of two things. One, I'm also no contact with my parents. I know you're talking about a different person, but I just want to say in general, because people I know who are no contact with their parents, it's the same type of process, right? It's a long time of like being gracious and educating and being kind and like trying and trying and trying. People don't just go like, I don't want to talk to my parents. Like, right. It's this very long process. And the process itself is perpetuating the same harm that's the reason you needed to step away in the first place.
Well, that's good. Say that one more time. The process itself.
The process of the educating and the trying is perpetuating the same harm.
Oh, so true.
And so in the case of parents, obviously that's like a very long process. Yeah. But even with, you know, friends and trying to educate people, this analogy that came up when I was talking to a friend the other day was around race, that we were talking about, you know, white people just being like, just keep educating me. And that it's very much like, you know, in America, black people are in a burning building and white people are standing outside the burning building saying two things. One, tell me exactly how you want me to help.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
I can't help if you won't tell me how. And then two, can you please educate me about the history of arson? You know?
Oh my God. That's such a good example. Yeah. And I would say in Canada too, we have so much embedded racism. We just try to hide it a lot in Canada and pretend it doesn't exist. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have like some slightly bigger grants.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's so true. And yeah, you know, it's funny because I mean, with my family, it has been about a decade of like, yeah. And then again, in the summer, I just reached a point where it was like, I can't. And then, you know, and then a family member emails me about the latest, like the week, or is it called Wegovy? Whatever that, the latest week, Novo Nordisk weight loss drug. And I'm like, okay, do you not understand anything about what I believe in the world or what I do? And then unsolicited feedback about my podcast and like all this stuff. And I was like, you know what? We're done. Like, no. Every time I get an email from you, it is causing me stress. And there was no curiosity. Like, I even just simple things like, it's so funny. It's not even related to oppression, but the energy is the same, where I got an email from a family member saying, you know, your audio is not that great. Here's what you need to do to fix it. And this person is not a podcaster, and not even a single question about, hey, like I noticed there's some stuff with your audio. like, what are you trying to do? Is this, are you aware of it? Like, no curiosity, just assuming. And of course I knew. I just couldn't afford, when I started my podcast, to do anything other than what I was doing. 10 episodes later, I got equipment. I got a great producer. Like, it's beautiful now. But like, it was that, it was the assumption, the lack of curiosity. And I feel like that is the, those are the emblematic ingredients that show up in these, this long kind of education process with people.
Yeah. And also, like, people don't make those types of unsolicited comments to white men in positions of power.
They do not.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and so it's not even that they really care about your audio quality. It's that probably, I mean, I'm just assuming, because mm-hmm. this is what happens, that they don't like your message. And so they're coming at it from a different angle because they're trying to shut you down
100%.
Or, you know, get you to be more quiet or speak in the tone that they want, but using these sort of more socially acceptable angles.
Yeah. And it's so pervasive. I mean, I coach mostly women leaders. And these are women who are like leading big teams. They're middle managers and higher. And so much of what we talk about in our sessions is how do they not lose their voice around their often male managers. It's just, it's so pervasive, Mattia. Like, I just, oh,
yeah,
it's just, it's exhausting and frustrating.
Yeah.
We're all, like, so many people are spending so much emotional energy to figure out how to not be harmed. And we're twisting ourselves into pretzels to work so that we don't upset the oppressors.
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
I think about that so much, like how much energy and power there is tied up in just responding to the systems we live in and just like you say, trying not to be harmed or like trying to be as safe as possible. And these are like very reasonable actions that our body and brain are taking on our behalf to try to keep us safe. Like, they're totally reasonable and they're based on real things. And then simultaneously, we're often also being gaslit, essentially being told, well, like, you could just not wear makeup if you don't want to. It's like,
yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, that's it. That's it. The gaslighting. Yeah. And when it comes to like diet culture and anti-fatness, that means women spending most of their day doing calorie math or carb math and thinking about how their body is presenting in the world, as if, because in our current world with beauty ideals the way they are, like, how a body looks is what gets you closer to the top of that body hierarchy that Sonia Renee Taylor talks about, which is this image that there's a big ladder and at the top of that ladder is white, cis, hetero, male, neurotypical, wealthy, educated. And the rest of us are on different rungs descending down the ladder. And all we do is spend our lives trying to crawl over each other to get to that top rung.
Yeah.
I don't want that top rung. Like,
exactly.
I'm like, that's like, I think that's been the big shift in my life and why I've gone no contact and why I've separated from certain friends, because it's like, I am not interested in performing that anymore. And I don't need to. I'm very privileged in that I can do work that I love, work with people that I find interesting. I have safety. I have a home. So I do have the privilege to step away from the ladder as much as is possible. I'm still living in a capitalist system. I still have a mortgage to pay. God, if someone knows how I can like get off grid and, you know, and not pay a mortgage. Oh my God. I'm so aware of my privilege when it comes to that. And I just keep thinking, if someone hears a story from a guest on my podcast and it gets them excited to step away from diet culture, even if like they stop weighing themselves every day or multiple times a day, as many people do, if they just don't contribute to the food policing that happens in workplace lunchrooms.
Oh my God.
You know, if they don't focus on nutritional information with their children, you know, like there's very specific and simple things we can do to start to separate from the body, like the body oppression that is happening to all of us. It's not, even, it's not about fatness. It's like every person with a body feels this, is taught this from birth. And it's like body diversity is there for a reason. We are actually not in control of really anything related to our body or health. There are, and there's so much research around this again, you have to kind of like find it, but there are like two, I think it's 223. Cause I taught an upcoming guest is Dr. Monica Peralta. And we talked about diabetes because of course everything everyone knows about diabetes, it's like the fat disease, totally false. Anyway, it's a great episode. It's coming out soon, but there's like 223 influences on our health. Food and exercise are just two. And yet how much effort and time and intellectual energy do we spend trying to achieve health?
Yeah.
As if it's some kind of moral obligation.
Goalpost anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Right? Right?
Yeah. Because as long as there's a product that can be sold to us, that goalpost will always keep moving.
That's it. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I have kind of a big question, which is, basically, so I know that in the work that you're doing, you obviously are sharing a lot of information where you're kind of pushing back against something, right? So there's these false messages, there's these lies, and then you are speaking the truth and kind of reacting to this stuff. If that, and I know this is totally imaginary, but if that just went away,
oh my God,
and you weren't pushing against anything anymore, and everybody just had all this basic information, like the real information about what fatness is and how it functions. And like, you know, not to say that every obia goes away in the world, but just that, you know, you're not pushing against this anymore. And sort of the information is there. What do you imagine you would be doing or saying? Like, what would your message become?
Oh, so interesting. That is such a beautiful, beautiful big question. And I'm so aware of how in the weeds I am with pushing against that it's hard for me to imagine what better could be. It's interesting. I read recently a book by Octavia Butler. It's the series, it's a trilogy. I think it's called Earth's Children? Or basically the world has imploded. We, you know, we have annihilated ourselves. And then aliens show up. And to me, it's very interesting. It's such an interesting read because it is, you know.
Are these the like kind of cat like?
Yeah.
I've read these.
Right? It's like the thought experiment of can we make it? And what she talks about in the book, and I think about this all the time, is that, you know, the fatal flaw with humanity is that we are intelligent and we believe in hierarchy. So if like the hierarchy went away, I'm just like, oh, what would my message be? I mean, it's so hard because like as a coach, what I spend a lot of time with people on essentially is talking about how to achieve fulfillment, like internal fulfillment, right? But if everyone had this knowledge and we weren't victims of capitalism and racism and anti-fatness and white supremacy and all of this, then I think we would naturally and you know, oh my God, if like ads and commercials and all of that stuff could just go away, like, and we could actually think for ourselves, I think we would be living in that natural state. And so I don't know, maybe I would be like helping people learn how to swim or something, you know, like I'm a swimmer. I was a competitive swimmer. I love teaching. I think I would still be teaching, facilitating, working with people because that's just my natural kind of zone of genius. But yeah, maybe it would be, I can't even imagine like the absence of, because again, my whole life is constructed around, like all my jobs and the podcast are constructed around how do we create spaciousness so that we're not just operating on white supremacist capitalist default.
Right.
It's really hard for me to imagine a world outside. Thank you for that question. I'm going to percolate on that. I don't know, Mattia, what should I do? You tell me.
Well, part of the reason, I mean, I imagine you, yeah, doing stuff. I love that you said teaching swimming, just like doing stuff like teaching people how to enjoy their bodies and like use their bodies in interesting ways.
Totally. Yeah. And I think what would be amazing about that is that there would be, because right now it's actually really, I do a lot of work with people around body. I've run like naked workshops. Like I do all kinds of stuff with people and bodies. And There's so much resistance. We are so trained to be ashamed, embarrassed of our bodies. And we are so disembodied because of it. We are not connected. So much of my work is about connecting. So if people were already connected, maybe we could all like have superpowers and stuff. Like we don't even know. I feel like we haven't even tapped into our actual abilities.
Yeah. I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
The like inherent, because some people do have what look like superpowers, right? Oh, and a lot of it I think is related to embodiment and being, you know, when you're in the body, you have that access to intuition. Like it's this real
100%.
Chain of possibility. And we rarely get to go down that road at all because, you know, I mean, I love the term, I didn't make this up, but I love the term surviving capitalism, you know, that's what we're doing. And I think about this a lot as a practitioner that, you know, I wish I could just make myself obsolete by having everyone just feel deeply worthy and like they didn't need anything.
Right? Like, please stop work coming me to out me of and, a job.
And, yeah, you know, coming to me and saying, I'm sure I'm the one person you can't help. And I'm like, everybody says that. Like, this is how everybody feels. We all feel this way. And therefore, it's not an individual problem. Right? And that's another thing I really think about with all this, you know, capitalist solutions is that it's framing all societal and collective problems as individual problems, because again, that's something that a product can be sold to you to, in theory, solve, but it doesn't fix the underlying issue.
Not at all. Well, and it also has the impact of separating us from each other. Again, like every client I work with, whether it's leadership or creative writing or body, they all think they're the only person who feels that way.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I love running groups because I'm like, okay, I can tell you you're not the only one, but let's hear it from everybody. And then you go around and people are like, oh, it's not just me. And like that act of separation, of othering, is why systemic oppression is so brilliantly successful.
Yeah. And it keeps us from organizing to fight back, both because we're off in our corner learning our lesson that we've been told we need to learn, but also because, you know, we're exhausted and tired. And when you were talking earlier about, you know, safety and boundaries, and then also, you know, the ways that you've learned about advocacy, you know, the different ways of doing this, you can only do that when you have some amount of support. And most people I know who do activism and advocacy as one of their main things experiences some of the most severe burnout I've seen.
Yeah,
100%. You know, because it's because that support isn't there and we're separated and exhausted. And I think about this so much that like where I do think the individual can really have some power is really in just learning how to take care of the body enough to be able to come back to the collective and be able to be involved and have something to offer from a real place of being resourced and not just pushing through on fumes.
Amazing. Yeah, because the act of practicing that has people do things like set boundaries, like nap, like rest, and you naturally are those are rebellious actions. Like I talk about being a fat joy rebel because to actually embrace joy as a marginalized person, as opposed to being like the good fatty who should be restricting food and always at the gym and self-flagellation and, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm so fat, you know, like that is rebellious and that does take energy.
This is so good.
It's fascinating. I mean, my husband and I have a ritual in the morning where we have our coffee and we kind of sit in these two chairs that kind of look out into our little postage stamp backyard. So we like look into everyone else's backyards, like these sick houses. We are suburban right now. And we literally almost every day, I'm like, we need to stop this. This is a morning ritual. It is not motivating to get up and do work. Where we're like, how do we like get out of capitalism? Like, how do we actually do it? And, you know, and
oh my God, I love that as a morning routine.
Right? I'm like, we need to like shift because then I wake and then we get up and I'm like, I hate everything and everyone. And I'm like, okay, let's go be, let's go coach or teach. But it is this like we are on this hamster wheel that has been designed for us. And yet it's so expertly designed that you really can't get off because everything is connected to it.
And we're given these little moments of choice, yes, so that we have the illusion that we're choosing, yeah, to be on the hamster wheel.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's really interesting in a very practical way. Like, you know, my partner and I make very deliberate decisions with our money. We are quite anti-capitalist. And yet, you know, his kids, his wife or his, sorry, my husband's ex-wife, so the kid's mom and their family are the complete opposite. Like, they go to Disney multiple times a year, and the kids literally, like, they have all the devices, and they have since they were like very young. And there's just this commitment to capitalism from the other side. And so we're always, so even if one family or one person chooses, like, okay, we're going to try to live this way, you're encountering overt and what's the opposite of overt resistance, whatever the opposite of overt resistance is, and contrast everywhere else. So the kids show up with like their new Apple iWatches, and they have iPhones and iPads, and there's this expectation that we would have all of this stuff at our house too. And we're like, no, that's actually not aligned with our values for these reasons. And no, we're not going to go to Disney. And no, like, but here's what we are going to do. We like to go out for hikes, and we like to make home cooked food instead of eating out constantly. And, you know, it's hard. It is hard to resist, and it's been designed to make it hard to resist. So I don't know. I wish we could just solve it over coffee, but we have yet to do that.
Yeah. And just to add a little bit of where my brain is with what you're talking about, like, I also, you know, periodically, and I'm in one of these phases right now where I was off the social media for the winter, and it felt really great. I had been off it for July, and I was off of Facebook for like 4 years, some years ago. So I've had these periods of time where I'm just like not engaged in that way, and it always feels so good. So I'm in this period again where I'm just like, oh, I'll just like, I would love to just be off social media permanently, delete all of it, never look back, you know, burn it all down. And then having this, you know, just this feeling and this urge. And what I was thinking about as you were talking about these external influences and kind of tying back in the talking about energy earlier and how much energy we're wasting, that is my brain going to an individualistic solution to what I perceive to be a problem, when really I could also get a lot of energy back by just not being plugged into capitalism in general, which is, again, hard if you're on social media, because the whole point of them is to advertise to you. But I think about this a lot. It's like, how do I get this brain space back from all this nonsense that is really, you know, like holding me in these systems in a really brutal way?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. God, that's such a great question. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, especially because, and now with social media, especially, you know, I mean, if you want to promote your podcast, one of the best ways to do it is on social. Like, we don't, like, how, like, it's almost like other avenues have been taken away. It is kind of like social or what? Mm. So we get forced into conforming whether we want to or not. And yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah. And the part of it, I think, that I notice the most in myself, that I dislike the most, is just the brain space that it takes up. It's not the literal time, because I can set up systems around my time, right? I use, like, I have self-control on my computer. So I'll like turn that on for social media sites, like while I'm working, just so that I won't instinctively go to check it, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And like, I can set up systems, but it still takes up space in my brain that I don't like. And again, I'm just like, I'm now reflecting because of this conversation. I'm like, oh, what if I could just like yoink fat phobia out of my brain, so that, like,
right?
Like, how much space would that clear up? How much space would it clear up if I could remove some of these other societal messages, right? Like, what am I wasting time really on? And it's not, you know, these vague connections with my friends on social media. It's like nonsense around, anyway.
Yeah.
So I will continue to chew on that, because I think that's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
For myself is like, how can I really reclaim my energy around these things that I just like don't want in my brain? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you're making me think about the work of surfacing unconscious bias as well, because there's the conscious stuff that we know. Like,
exactly.
Oh, okay, great. I looked at, I saw a fat body and I had a thought. Okay, that's a conscious bias. But in, like, the unconscious bias work is like the really hard work. I still have so much unconscious bias, and it surprises me when it surfaces and I'm like, oh my God, like, how? Why is that thought there? I thought I had like weeded all of those thoughts from my brain.
Because once they become conscious, it's a lot easier to do that. But the ones that are so, so subtle that we don't even notice.
About ourselves and others, you know, that internalized stuff. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. And the stuff about ourselves. I mean, I actually I'm just going to be recording a podcast called You Were Not a Bad Child, which is about a conversation I had with my therapist a while back where I had just said something. And again, like, to me, I was just so, I heard this so much and I was like, well, of course my parents did this because I was a difficult child. And she was like, well, maybe you weren't a difficult child. Your parents just didn't know how to parent you. And I was like, what? Oh, come on.
I know my.
How has that thought just been living rent free in my head for, over 30 years?
I had the exact same thing with my therapist about, I got pregnant when I was a teen and had an abortion. And I've worked through a lot of that and then like had to work through different layers of it as I've just gotten older. And I remember, and I was like working through some of this with my therapist, who's brilliant, who's an anti-oppression educator and a somatics therapist and does dream work. I'm like, this is like, oh my God, all the things I love. And so I remember like saying like, and so, you know, I took charge of it. And like, cause we were talking about my sense of over responsibility, and like, I'd never connected what I'm about to say, and I'm going to share, it's very vulnerable. I'm going to share it, but I also think it's really important that we just talk about this stuff. And so what she helped me realize, like, as I was like, yeah. And so like, I made a list of all like the abortion clinics I could go to and how much it would cost and blah, 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 blah. And she was like, I just want to pause for a second. She goes, you were, I think I was like, I won't name the age because I don't want to identify too much. She goes, but you know, I was a young teen. And she's like, you know, maybe it wasn't for you to have to take charge of that situation. And I was just like, oh, but I was just always trained to be a strong, independent female. So like, of course I would. And I have this drive that I have lived with, this like hyperachiever drive. And it's so interesting to think about like that moment where I, as a young kid, took control of figuring out my own abortion. And the messaging that I got from my parents was like, yes, of course you should. That is your responsibility. Like, there was no room for feelings. There was no room for emotion around it. It was like, you just figure that shit out. You take care of it. You just like, go, go, go. And so this had led to a lot of kind of dampening emotions, not feeling things, over responsibility, over planning, hyper achieving. But like,
it's like the opposite of embodiment.
The opposite of embodiment. And so like, and I had never once questioned in my life until probably 2 years ago when I had this conversation with my therapist that actually that's kind of a problematic situation. And it's funny. It's one of these things where I'm like, I'm not mad at my parents because they did the best they could. But also as an adult now who's like,
that's fucked up.
I can like reparent and I can reheal and think about that a bit differently. But God, those moments of realization are like, what? Just when you think you've like figured stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible, those moments.
So I would love to just give you a minute here to just kind of list facts or like things you wish people knew. You do not need to back them up with like, you know, footnotes at this time, because obviously if people want to go deeper, there are many resources. Your podcast is an incredible, you know, starting point. But I would love for you, and this doesn't just have to be about fat joy, but like anything based on what we're talking about or in your experience that you're just like, I wish people knew these things.
Oh
and
gosh.
Just like list some things you wish people knew.
Oh, so many. Do we have 2 hours? okay, if I could just bottom line it and make it like, I wish people knew that they are always at choice, and that if they ever feel stuck, that there are resources and people to support them. I think like that feeling of stuckness, of hopelessness, of helplessness, I think drives so many people to actions that are deeply destructive to them and everyone else around them. So I think at core, people knowing, even within this society, that choice exists in some capacity, even if it's just within our own hearts, you know? I wish people knew to not make assumptions that what you see on the outside of somebody's person, like if you see a fat person walking down a street, that you don't know anything about them. Like, I wish people knew that you know nothing about what's going on for anyone else. It's a bit of a cliche, but it's so true. Like, don't judge a book by its cover. You have no idea. Just like if anyone looked at you, they would have no idea of what's going on in your life. I wish people knew how deeply, deeply destructive, disembodying, harmful diet and wellness culture and anti-fatness is, because it's not just about fat people saying, hey, treat me like a human. It is about everybody striving, being distracted to conform to some ideal that is rooted in racism, based on nothing. There is no scientific evidence, and that it's been designed to spend your money and keep you occupied in your brain so you do not resist the fucked up world that we live in, and that we just allow it and we're just lemmings. So God, I wish people knew that. I wish people knew that they could handle discomfort, that they can learn about who they consider to be other. So that might be a different race, a different gender, different sexual choice, and not be threatened by it. Like, we can handle discomfort. I think we spend most of our lives trying to hold on to comfort. And again, this is what capitalism does. It's like, buy this car, you'll be way more happy and comfortable. Like, oh my God, we're designed to handle discomfort. It's how we grow and learn. So embrace discomfort. I wish people knew that they can do that and it's good for them, especially when it comes to systemic oppression. Like, why do you need to like pay attention to pronouns? Deal with the discomfort of like the brain power that's involved with that. I also, on that note, because this is something that I've had to learn as someone who is white and who has a lot of privilege, that it's okay to fuck it up. I get people's pronouns wrong all the time. And then I'm like, oh, sorry, my bad. They, da da da. And you just go on. Like, it's okay. You can make messes because you can clean up messes. So be okay with discomfort. When you make a mess, you can clean it up. We all have that capacity. And if we tried it a few times and got more tolerant to it, it would really help with this perfectionist. Like, perfectionism is such a white supremacist trait. And I know because yes. I lived it big time. Yes. It was only, I'm very lucky again, I'm very privileged. I did this year-long leadership development program where we were told to make messes. And like, I learned, oh, I can screw it up. I cannot be perfect. And I can repair and I can be okay. So making messes doesn't scare me anymore. So it's okay for me to be uncomfortable. It's okay for me to take risks. So I really wish everyone, discomfort, make a mess, you can clean it up. It's okay. You're going to be fine. Like I said, I could go on forever. I'm trying to think if there's just one more maybe that I really wish people knew. Oh, I got it. Okay. So shame is insidious. It's like this toxic mold that lives inside of us. I wish people knew that they are worthy exactly as they are. They don't have to earn worthiness. You don't have to earn worthiness through living in a small body like society says you should. You don't have to earn worthiness by acting certain ways or believing certain beliefs. Like, you just get to be worthy simply for existing. And that's a huge, I feel like that's so core. That's such a big one that everything around us tells us we are not worthy unless we buy this thing or look this way or act this way or, you know, adhere to guidelines a certain way. As long as we're crawling up that ladder, then maybe we'll get worthy. No, you are worthy exactly as you are. I think I had to repeat that to myself for like 2 years, just like literally I had it on a post-it in front of me. And I just would repeat it over and over because I didn't believe it. I grew up not believing that. I grew up that in order to be worthy, I had to take charge of my own abortion. I had to hyperachieve. I had to make all A's. I had to be, you know, the best at everything. And it's like, actually, no, I am worthy exactly as I am. And no one can take that from you. Okay, I'll stop there because I really could go on forever. That's the problem when you ask a coach a question like that. I'm like, ooh, all the lessons.
All the things that I keep telling people over and over. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Love it. And so my last two questions for you, where can people find you? And we'll put all those links in the show notes. And then advice for yourself at another age.
For the podcast, it's, what is it? Fatjoy.life is the URL. All the episodes are there, as well as links to the Apple page, the Spotify page. I've got full video on YouTube. So on Instagram, it's also fatjoy.life. They can also follow me directly, coach_Sophia. I am on TikTok, but I'm so ambivalent around TikTok, but you can follow me if you want. I'm Fatjoy. I think it's there, Fatjoy Life as well. I had to buy one of those like squatter URL squatters got fatjoy.com and they wanted thousands, like $5,000 for it. I'm like, no. So I went with fatjoy.life. So that's where the life comes from. And I kind of like that.
Yeah,
I want to live a Fatjoy life. LinkedIn, if you want like my professional stuff, I mean, I really am everywhere. So people can find me with my name or Fat Joy. I will say when I started the podcast and I was trying to think of a name, I typed Fat Joy into Google and nothing came up except for Fat Joe. It was like, did you mean Fat Joe? And I'm like, no,
my God.
I did not mean Fat Joe. I couldn't find anything. Wow. And I'm a former librarian, so I know how to search. I even like was like quotation marks and blah, blah, blah. Nothing. So I will say now, however, I started the podcast in September. So now, however months later, that is 6 months later, my SEO is better. You can now find Fat Joy on the internet. You're welcome, everyone. Yeah, so those are all the places that people can find me and reach out. And I've got contact forms. You can reach out to me on my website and contact me in my DMs, you know, all the good stuff. And what I would tell, something I would tell my younger self, oh gosh, oh, my younger self was so, I was very good at following what systemic oppression set up for me. Excellent at it for so long. It was like my liberation journey only started in my, like, I would say mid-30s in a real way. So, and I'm 40, I'm about to be 43. So about 7-8 years. But before that I followed the playbook and felt horrible, but didn't know why and wasn't aware enough, courageous enough, I don't know, to investigate further. I was never one of those people. I'm always so envious of those people who just like see through the bullshit. I ate the bullshit. I followed the bullshit. Like I was like, I am living it. And, you know, and I like got divorced twice and I declared bankruptcy. And like, I've done like so many really hard things because I kept trying to do the thing I thought I was supposed to do. And it felt terrible. And then I would like be like, I would reject it dramatically. And it just led to so much heartbreak and unsafety, even while I was searching for like, what is safety? And it's so fascinating. So I think I would say to that person, I don't know what I want to say is pretty cheeky, is like, look, you're in the matrix, take the pill that will reveal everything. Like just start earlier. I'm so envious, Mattia, of people. I talk to people on my podcast who are in their 20s and they're like fully liberated. I'm like, God damn it. Oh my God, who could I have been if I had like learned this stuff in my teens and 20s? I'm so jealous and so inspired and hopeful that people in their 20s are figuring this shit out. I think it would be that, like, trust your gut that something is not right and dig deeper. Dig deeper. Stop listening to your parents and dig deeper. Or stop even, it wasn't even like so much listening to my parents, is stop following what you assume your parents want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just break free and try and see what happens. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna end with Matrix.
I love that. Thank you so much. This was such a delight. Yes, we definitely could keep at this for hours. There were so many little rabbit holes in my head that I was like, I'm not going to go down that right now. But this is also a great topic. So many great things. And we will send people your way. I'm so excited to be able to share this with people because this is like literally one of my special interest topics and has been for a long time.
Amazing.
Yeah, I want to get this out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. If you know someone who would be helped by this podcast, please share it with them. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and suggestions at Mattia@MattiaMorais.com. That's MattiaMorais.com. Thank you.